I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Welcome to another edition of Life Behind Bars. I'm Noah Rothbaum, the Daily Beast half full editor. Joining me as always is my colleague and co-host David Wondrich. How are you, Dave?
I'm good. Yourself?
I am well. I feel like recently we have been swimming upstream in a river of whiskey that has been coming out over the last couple of months.
I mean, sometimes your head goes under. You just can't help it.
We just do what we can.
Makes it into my mouth, and regret to say that, but it's true.
Even the best of whiskey swimmers, it happens to all of us. But it seems like every day there are more brands and new distilleries. And I think given the success of American whiskey, especially, that we've seen a lot of bold-faced names, celebrities, athletes of all kinds.
People who would have done a vodka 10 years ago.
Oh, yeah. Or perhaps a tequila 5 years ago. Yep. Willie Nelson was really a pioneer, not just in his music, but in his short-lived whiskey brand that came out, I don't know, almost 20 years ago, really. And then that, it wasn't a huge success.
It wasn't quite its time.
No, it was so far ahead of its time that I think if it had come out a little bit later, it would probably still be around. But, you know, that has definitely given birth to a whole, range of projects and whiskeys from all types of celebrities. And some of these things have become giant successes, like Casamigos in the tequila world from George Clooney and Randy Gerber. Others, are less successful. And, I think there are a lot of factors that probably go into the viability and the partners that they choose and the blenders and the distillers. So
and how they do business also absolutely is a big part of it too.
For sure. How they approach the liquor business, which is a highly regulated and very complex business.
With a lot of kind of secret channels and paths and all that kind of stuff.
For sure.
It's way more complicated than it seems.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, we have two guests today who are navigating that right now. Master blender Marianne Eaves, who I've known for years, and then
made herself a legend and already, it's amazing.
Absolutely. In just a few years. Yeah. And then her one of her partners in this new brand, Sweetens Cove, Mr. Andy Roddick, the former number one men's tennis player in the world and
phenomenal
tennis champion. And obviously there are other partners, Peyton Manning, name sounds vaguely familiar to me. I think I've heard of him too. Something about New Orleans, something about his dad being a football player. We'll get Andy and Marianne on the line shortly. Welcome, Andy and Marianne. Pleasure to have you on Life Behind Bars.
Welcome.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
It's an interesting project that you're working on. Maybe the two of you could talk about a little bit how you came together to work on this new whiskey brand.
Yeah, I'll jump in the beginning here because, first of all, thank you for having us on. Because when we get to the technical aspects of our product, I won't be the one providing the information on that. So we'll jump in on the front end storytelling anyways. This all came from a business partner of mine named Mark Rivers, who is Marianne's worked with throughout this process, kind of kept going back to this idea. He found this little 9-hole golf course outside of Chattanooga in South Pittsburgh, Tennessee, called Sweetens Cove. A little bit kind of Field of Dreams meets Tin Cup, but that just this amazing place. And he kept going back to it and saying, there's something here. There's this magic, people kind of sleep overnight in tents. And one of the traditions of the first tee It's kind of like the anti-golf place, but with a really nice course and architecture design. And so one of the early traditions was in a show of fellowship, you would bring a bottle of whiskey, you'd have a shot, and then you would kind of leave the bottle behind for the next group. And then at the end of the day, when everyone was done, they would kind of go over their day, talk about shots they hit, talk about the shots they took. and then, you know, it was kind of this really cool tradition. But, you know, you get in the middle of Tennessee in 110 degree weather during the summer with stuff that's been sitting out all day. You know, you had your kind of hits and your misses for sure. And so we basically looked at each other one night and said, are we dumb enough to try to actually do our own brand? After tennis, my background is largely in real estate. And I kept going back to, you'd go to these high-end bars and there was a lot of real estate for Kentucky. And there were only, you know, two or three, four options for Tennessee. I go strictly from, a curiosity brand kind of premium offering. I think if we can actually nail it and get the right people involved as far as creating the product, I think there's a real lane to create something of a curiosity mechanism. And then if we can actually deliver a quality product, I think we might have something. And so we did that. And then as we're going through the processes, getting to know the rock stars in the community, obviously Marianne's name kept coming up over and over and over. And oh, by the way, she grew up, or was born down the street from this little golf course we were working on. So the Tennessee tie-in kept living over and over and over, and obviously getting Peyton Manning involved and having played for Tennessee, there was a real story and a real narrative. So we thought we could be pretty good at telling that story, but obviously we needed someone with the chops of Marianne to make sure that we didn't embarrass ourselves. Obviously with our investor group and our supporters, it goes one of two ways. If you put out something terrible, you're going to just get a huge amount of blowback. But if you actually go through the processes and really focus on quality and do it right before you do it quickly. You know, we didn't have a national rollout. We started off in Tennessee and in Georgia. We wanted to make sure we got it right, and at least we're credible and offering a premium product as opposed to a bit of a dog and pony show, which you know other people have done if they've been able to create the audience. So I guess that's how we got to our first batch, and then you know Marianne obviously created something new and exciting for this year also. So it's been a pretty fun process. And from where I sit as someone who is a complete novice, it's been really fun to kind of watch and learn.
What strikes me about your story is Dave and I have talked about this, I think on previous episodes of Life Behind Bars, and Dave has definitely written about this. We were like, you have this crazy golf boom, like at the end of the 1800s, right, Dave?
Yeah, 1890s.
And that helps popularize Scotch in America. That's one of these things that helps make America like a whiskey, you know, more of a whiskey drinking country, you know, where people are excited about the game and that's tied into like having whiskey. Did I get that right, Dave? Or
And it also made everybody drink Scotch highballs, and the highball like becomes kind of the American drink. But it's funny because it was Scotch, so it's kind of funny and cool to see bourbon sneaking into the golf story as well, or American whiskey at least.
I mean, they may have invented the game, but we just like whiskey, we have made it our own in yeah. America,
like many other things, products, industries in America. I guess that's yeah. that's an interesting connection that you actually made to golf there.
Boy, and even like in Scotland, I mean, I had in college, I was fortunate enough to spend the semester at St. Andrews University, and they, as a result, they treated me as a local, so I could play the old course for like
oh fun,
£10 in the off season. I mean, it was really mm-hmm. I had to hit off a mat. I mean, I did not really belong on such hallowed ground. But it I'm not sure what goes on in their clubhouse, certainly, but
there's some whiskey drinking.
I can only imagine that there's
their clubhouse. I'm guessing it's a little bit different than our trailer that we have at Sweetens Cove. One of our on top of being crazy enough to try to start a whiskey brand, one of our big ads for the golf course was finally putting in a bathroom. So that's so it's not exact. Yeah. It's probably not the RNA like you're used to, but we do it our way. We have some fun with it.
But now it's a lot better when you hit a ball into the bushes.
Yes,
exactly. Sure. You don't have to be so careful. That's where you put your feet.
That's right.
I think, Marianne, the last time, or at least the most memorable time that I think that we spent together, we were judging ACSA's spirits competition, and they had it in Indiana at Ted Huber's, and we were staying in Louisville, and Louisville got about an inch and a half of snow, which, like, you know, in New York or Wisconsin would have to equal about 15 feet of snow the way that they were treating it. And you and I took like a pretty death defying van ride every day from Louisville to Indiana, where I just remember thinking, like, if this ends, it's going to be a sad way for the American whiskey industry, for all these people all to die in this van in rural Indiana, going to this thing. We made it through.
The whole band going down in flames right there.
Exactly.
You're like the Don McLean song.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Like, yeah, I was like, well, at least it'll be memorable. But, you know, as literally people are forgetting to like clean the roofs of their car and all the snow is flying into our window and we're going up and down these hills. And I'm just thinking, oh, my God. That was probably 6 years ago. So, but I still vividly remember that.
Yeah, it was very memorable for me as well.
Funny how near death experiences work like that.
Right. I was like, all of these whiskeys are delicious. Like I am so happy to be alive. Like, you know, everything is wonderful. You know, in those 6 years, I think at the time you were still at Brown Forman, maybe, or you had just left, you know, working on Woodford. And obviously you've worked on a lot of different projects, you know, in the last 5 or 6 years, and how have you enjoyed, you know, working, you know, for one, you know, brand, you know, now to sort of working on a variety of projects?
Yeah, I feel like my evolution through my career, going from a big corporation to a startup distillery, now into kind of the Wild West and consulting spirit, has been really fascinating. And while I think I gained the most education working for Brown-Forman and their experience and history in the industry, it was really kind of narrow, the focus there. You know, I was working primarily on traditionally made Kentucky bourbon. And then when I moved to Castle and Key, I got a little bit of experience making gin and vodka, which I thought both of those products turned out pretty well for, you know, never having made a gin or a vodka on my own before. And then, you know, now moving into spirits consulting, I am just loving, you know, the freedom and the opportunity to create, innovate, and find these really special partnerships.
We recently ran a story that our friend Lou Bryson, our columnist, wrote about, you know, about kind of like the whole idea of Tennessee bourbon, right? And, you know, obviously people in Tennessee are very specific about calling their whiskey Tennessee whiskey and not calling it traditionally bourbon. And now we're starting to see some Tennessee distilleries actually call their whiskey bourbon. So I thought it was interesting that the, you know, so you went down the route of being like, look, this is bourbon. We're not going to call this Tennessee whiskey. And was that a choice that all of you made to label it that way?
100%. It was a very considered decision to call it bourbon versus Tennessee whiskey. I think that the excitement around bourbon, Tennessee deserves that. I think that Tennessee whiskey, you know, as with global whiskeys, people are sometimes confused about, well, what does that mean? Why is it different? It's not really that different. And it's on the same level, if not superior in a lot of ways. Tennessee whiskey as bourbon.
Well, it's definitely a brave choice. I mean, I think traditionally Tennessee has been very vocal about, like, Lou's story talks about getting the only bar fight that he's ever gotten into was with a bartender over whether or not Jack Daniels was bourbon. And, you know, I remember, you know, years ago, Dale DeGroff, you know, the famous bartender, you know, who's been on like Behind Bars before, like, you know, being in a cocktail class he was doing in probably 2002. And he was like, the word bourbon doesn't appear on this label. And I was like, no, like, I don't believe you. Like, let me see the bottle. And it's like, oh, you're right. It does not. And I think that's one of these fights that's...
Oh, it's perennial. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's, you know, the people have been having for a century, whether or not, or at least maybe more, you know, whether or not bourbon is, Tennessee whiskey is bourbon, and or if it's truly different. We'll see if attitudes change, like, in the next couple of years, is more Tennessee bourbon.
Yeah, absolutely. Released.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
What did you look for in a flavor profile to make it a Tennessee bourbon?
It was really interesting. You know, our approach to creating products is really focused around what we can find, what's available out there, and doing a little bit of treasure hunting to discover, you know, what the opportunities are in stock that's available. So while I may have had, you know, some fantasy idea of a flavor profile in my mind, it really wasn't until I started tasting samples of different lots that were real that we could actually purchase that I started to develop an idea about what the product profile could be. And even more specifically from there, you know, I had an idea of what was possible, but then getting really a grip on the stock that we purchased and tasting every single one of those barrels. And then, you know, starting kind of one by one, layering them in together and seeing how it developed. I think one of the most beautiful things about my relationship with Sweetens Cove and the freedom that they give me in my process to create these products for them is that they, like I do, they see each barrel as a kind of a color on a painter's palette. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they give me the canvas and say, you know, make the most beautiful thing that you can make. And then they take it and they hang it on the wall.
Were there any debates between like Andy with you and Peyton and Marianne and your other partners as to like what the flavor profile should be? Or
I wouldn't ask Marianne advice on how to serve. And I'm pretty sure Peyton wouldn't ask her how to throw down field. you know, our job is to put the pieces in place to let her succeed, right? To take her feedback. I'm getting to the point where I barely respect the small opinion I have in this industry right now. You know, our job is to take what she does and maximize it, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, so we certainly understand our lane, but there is zero chance that we will ever sit in a room and Marianne will say, I think we should do X, Y, and Z as far as the taste profile, and we will have, you know, we will value our opinion enough to actually counter. our job is to provide the resources. You know, if something's not working, if she needs something, you know, younger, a little bit older, you know, something, then we need to go treasure hunt. We need to find that and give her the pieces to do what she does. But, you know, our lanes are very separate, you know, as far as what we know we can do to add value to this company.
Obviously, American whiskey is booming, beyond booming, and the supply of, you know, barrels, which, I mean, you used to be able to buy whatever you wanted from, you know, just about anybody. And obviously now the supply has gotten incredibly tight. Like, is it hard to find the type of barrels that you want for the, I mean, this is not a well whiskey. This is, what, it's like $200 a bottle. I mean, this is like a serious, you know, almost collector's type of whiskey. Is it hard to get those types of barrels today?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, so our original launch date for our product in 2020 was, I think, March 26th, mm-hmm. which the world changed a little bit right before March 26th. So Noah, you're spot on. As far as the challenges with one, sourcing product, two, our bottle tops came from Portugal. Mm-hmm. So just kind of figuring out how to mix and match everything is certainly been challenging. And, you know, a lot of our strategy was going to be bar culture, high-end restaurants. You know, we certainly had a way that we wanted to go about it. Then all of a sudden, the only way we were going to get it out was through liquor stores. And so from a branding exercise, you know, I guess as an individual athlete, your entire career is kind of a branding exercise. it was a bit of a challenge. And so we have to be open-minded, whether it's trying to find a permanent home for the company is certainly something we're up to. You know, I think we've talked about a more kind of what we call an approachable premium product. Mm-hmm. You know, Tennessee will always be the heartbeat of what we do, but we may have to go you know, outside the source and kind of marry across state lines at some point. So yeah, it's you know, in no uncertain terms, it's challenging, but you know, lucky enough, we have the resources, we have people who kind of understand, and you know, we have our champion, Marianne, who can certainly guide us, you know, as the expert in the field.
And are we correct in assuming that the realities of these of the barrel world right now is part of what's driving like a batch strategy? So we have batch one, batch two, rather than just keeping, you know, a consistent, always the same.
Not entirely. You know, there's lots of big brands out there that rest their hats on having consistency. I think the market, especially at the price point where Sweetens is, the customer for that really appreciates, you know, the exclusive releases, these low volume, yeah, really unique expressions of what we're able to put together. So I think embracing the treasure hunt, as we said, and create these unique mm-hmm. releases, while also, you know, looking for an opportunity to come up with something that is like the bottle that you keep on your bar cart that, you know, you can always rely on to make an excellent old fashioned.
And I think something else is like, we're a tiny company. Like we're kind of like a nothing. We have like a couple of employees. Like we are flexible. We are nimble enough to where, you know, if Marianne gets her hands on something or has an idea, we can make three phone calls, and it's not like we have to run it through a board, and it's not like it has to, you know, go through a review for 6 months or a year. So we do try to take advantage of this moment in time where we're small enough to be able to fire on decisions. And you talked about, you know, the differences in calling it bourbon or calling it whiskey. And I think if we were a bigger company that had more to lose at this point, honestly, like that would have been a more serious conversation, as opposed to like, let's just make something awesome. And if it is a bourbon, then let's just call it that. Let's just kind of be straightforward with it a little bit. So I think part of it is one, obviously having confidence in what Marianne's going to do, but two, mm-hmm. we're a tiny little startup. You know, I know we have a bit of name candy involved, so that probably makes it seem a little bit more outsized from the outside looking in. But we're a tiny little company. We can make three phone calls and say, you know what, let's release a smaller batch of this because it tastes great and it's great, you know, and it's cool. As long as we don't affect the credibility of the product, then any kind of anything is in play.
You had talked about like a permanent home. Do you think you would, you know, ever build a distillery or you know, or contract with like a one supplier to make a certain type of, you know, like the kind of Pappy Van Winkle Buffalo Trace relationship? Or
yeah, I mean, I think it's all on the table. I think from basically, I mean, we sold just under 14,000 bottles last year. So do we have the cash reservoir to go out and just build something from scratch? I don't know that we're at that point, but we are looking actively at whether it's, you know, a different partnership, mm-hmm. whether it's a distillery that already exists and kind of moving in. If there's someone that's looking to, you know, make a liquid exit, then, you know, we certainly would be open to those conversations. So while nothing is concrete, I do know that we... the sourcing supply issue that you talked about isn't something that is just going to poof disappear one day. So we do need to strategize on what the long-term solution is for that.
Yeah. Manning family has deep roots in New Orleans. You know, I know a lot of the focus has obviously been on certain markets. Do you think New Orleans will be one that you'll go after next, since it's so close to Peyton and his family?
I think we're available in Louisiana mm-hmm. right now. So obviously, listen, when we're marching it out, I don't think it's coincidental that, you know, there's a Tennessee connection. I've spent most of my life in Texas. It's just easier to have conversations in places that you know backwards and forwards. And obviously New Orleans is one of those places. So if we call not only Peyton and Eli, but if we call Cooper, who does amazing in the hotel business there, and say, hey, listen, is there any connectivity? Can we somehow leverage what you have going on? So those are all conversations that are constantly evolving. And you know, obviously available in Colorado with Peyton delivering a Super Bowl there. I don't think that's accidental. And I think it would be foolish not to use those levers that we have at our disposal. But obviously New Orleans is a special place, and it's there aren't a lot of places better to kind of kick back and find a cool bar and have one of your favorite drinks.
How will the brand kind of measure its success and sort of, you know, figure out, like, I think given your fan base and Peyton's fan base and Eli's fan base and Arianne's fan base, like, I think it's not hard to probably get people to buy one bottle, right? But like, what is the success or the way to get, you know, people to come back, or people get it who have no idea who's behind, like, the bottle? Like, do you think that's like a year out, like 5 years out?
Yeah. So the questions as far as, you know, how we project 4 to 5 years is, I don't know. We have stuff we hope for, right. and we're kind of regroup and figure out what our next path is. You know, this year we wanted to get into at least 4 more new markets, but again, we want to do it responsibly. You know, we don't have our names and faces on the bottle, right. like a lot of the mm-hmm. brands. You know,
the only name on the bottle is Marianne's, which I thought was pretty awesome.
Well, that's the name that should be on it, because she's the one who created it. You know, now as far as branding and using our bases or our ability to, you know, have you all have us on the show and prop Marianne up and have her tell the story of the product is certainly an advantage. But we're under no disillusion that, you know, without Marianne, we'd be putting a quality product in a bottle. It doesn't matter how many touchdown passes you throw. If you're in the bourbon business, you have to create a great product.
Well, I mean, that's, you would think people thought like that, but we've seen a lot of brands come and go where that doesn't seem to be part of the plan. So I think that's kind of refreshing.
Yeah, I think we were aware of that. You know, I kind of mentioned it as a, like if we put out a stinker, we're going to get one chance with this. If we put out a clunker on the first one, you know, to your point, no, we're not going to get a second chance, and we're not going to get a repeat buyer. So the focus has to be on the product. If we go a little bit slower, we actually ended up going into more markets this year. But if it would have been, you know, 2 and we would have had to make an adjustment because, you know, the feedback wasn't what we wanted, then we would have slowed it down. And again, being kind of a smaller company at this point, we can kind of, you know, have the feedback come in and then kind of reset and see where we're going. But we're not in a rush. You know, we have confidence. We're not in a rush to make a huge move tomorrow. We want to do, like we always say, and I said it earlier in the podcast, we want to do it right before we do it fast.
And Marianne, I know obviously you have been able to do all types of interesting and fun projects without tipping your hand. Is there one like dream kind of whiskey or type of thing that you would like to do, like, in the future? Like, is there one? It could be anything, is there some kind of dream project for you that perhaps is in the future?
Yes, I think that there are several that I'm working on conceptually that I'm really excited about. One is one that I pitched to Sweetens that we were hoping to get together to launch this year, but with everything that happened with COVID and some challenges that came up through the process of figuring out how to make such a different type of product real, the reality really set in that. You know, if we need to keep our fans invested in the product, so we gotta find a new direction to release something exciting. But this other dream is not off the table, which I'm really excited about and gonna keep pursuing what that is. Not gonna give all the secrets away.
All right.
okay.
Yeah. But I think that there's a lot of things that haven't really been approached in the whiskey industry. I mean, it's an industry that, you know, and a product that's been around forever. I'm not going to say a specific date because then I know David will correct me. But, you know, there's
some wiggle room there.
Yeah, I think still as much as has been done in bourbon, there's exponentially more innovation ahead of us.
I do have one question about the Sweetens Cove formula. Did you test it by leaving it in a box at 110 degrees?
Did some of the corks pop out?
It's got to taste good at 110 degrees, doesn't it?
Yeah. If we would have done that, I could have imagined at the same moment, Marianne going, I can't work with these guys.
It's all we ask. It's got to taste good at 110 degrees.
I can only imagine a bottle of a Sweetens Cove in that little shed would probably not last that long. I don't think it would get to 100 degrees at this point.
Most bottles of Sweetens that are actually at the golf course in the shed are empty bottles of Sweetens.
Well, that's a good sign. It would suck if they were full.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, thank you both for coming on. Next time, hopefully Dave and I will meet you out on the course. We will challenge you to a round of golf. That'll give Dave and I time to learn how to really play golf. So
I'm going to go back to Scotland and brush up.
We're going to study.
Work on retrieving balls from gorse.
Nonstop. Right. Thank you for coming on. And we'll look out for more releases of Sweetens Cove.
Looking forward to it. Thank you.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Dave and I encourage you to drink responsibly always.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.